This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mokhtar, Philip C. and Kusu Chuang. First, we recap how global markets closed yesterday.
A mixed day, the US markets, Dow and S&P 500 were up 0.4%. The Nasdaq was down 0.05%, so marginal. Across in Asia, Nikkei was up 0.1%, Hang Seng up 1.4%, but Shanghai Composite was down 0.2%. STI closed flat, slightly marginally lower. But FBM KLCI closed flat as well, marginally up 0.02%.
And joining us for some thoughts on where markets are heading, we have Yap Junrong, market strategist with the trading platform IG. Good morning, Junrong. Thanks for speaking with us today. Let's start with a market outlook. You know, from chip shortages to supply chain issues, multiple headwinds are buffeting global economies. Are you seeing financial markets taking a more risk-off mode as a result?
Hi, good morning. So overall markets, of course, the one of the risk factors in focus is in terms of the stagflation theme, where we saw, you know, supply chain issues and a higher input material cost leading to actually a more persistent inflation than what many may expect at the early part of the year. So we saw some pricing of that risk when some market retracement was seen back in September. But as we move along into October, we are seeing some clarity in certain aspects that are helping to put the stagflation narrative on the back foot. So, for example, in terms of China Evergrande, we are getting some downplaying of the contagion risk by the PBOC, where authorities provide some verbal assurance that the risk can be contained. And on the other hand, in terms of inflationary pressure, some potential government intervention measures by China has recently led to some easing of commodity prices. And of course, with energy costs being one of the major factors which are keeping inflation figures elevated, hitting a pause on this rally point towards inflation figures potentially peaking towards the end of the year. So overall, such clarity are helping to downplay some of these risk factors for now and are helping to shift market focus towards the earnings season. So thus, earnings momentum has definitely been robust. If you look at the S&P 500, 11% of the S&P 500 companies have reported their earnings, with 84% of these companies actually delivering an earnings beat. So that also helped to provide a better economic growth pictures and help to instill some confidence in the markets for the global recovery. And of course, with corporate earnings taking center stage now, whether the risk-on move can continue largely depend on the subsequent earnings release. But thus far, you know, earnings momentum has definitely been showing a very strong picture.
And of course, in terms of China GDP, China, which you mentioned earlier, China's third quarter GDP came in way below market expectations. How's the prospect of slower growth in China going to affect ASEAN economies?
Yes, so for China, we saw a confluence of several risk factors or events that has led to an underperformance for its third quarter GDP recently. Aside from that, we also saw fixed investment and industrial production came in below expectations. So all this largely reflects the impact from China Evergrande, ongoing power shortages, regulatory clampdown, and supply chain shortages. So the general weakness in China's economic landscape may definitely translate to a declining domestic demand, where we saw recent China import figure rising just 17.6% in September, which actually missed expectations of a 20% expansion. So of course, with China being a net importer of goods from many Southeast Asian countries such as Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Singapore, that may pose some uncertainty on the mutual trade activities. So overall, dampening demand from China is definitely a cause of concerns. But with that, you know, we are also seeing some pockets of optimism, is that with the ongoing power shortages issue, there are actually a shift in demand for oil-related products or petrochemicals in the region, which may help to aid to cushion some economic impact. But that is definitely a very specific sector where things are more resilient. So if the slowdown turns out to be more persistent or worse than expected, another impact could come in terms of a weaker risk appetite towards some economies like Taiwan or South Korea, where trade links with China are definitely more concentrated. So that may translate to some near-term pressure for their currencies. And putting on scale with the international market, it may actually mean a higher cost of overseas materials for them at a time where supply chain issues are already pushing prices to the limit. So that could further depress corporate firms' margin in the region, which will remain a potential risk ahead to watch.
So, Junrong, you know, my siblings have warned me already not to expect any gifts this Christmas because, you know, global ports are being more gridlocked as supply shocks continue to reverberate globally. Now, with Singapore being a major transshipment hub, how is the industry being impacted by the shipping congestion?
Yeah, so, of course, we are looking at congested ports, especially along with some shortages of containers and labor. They have definitely worsened the supply bottlenecks by leading to some shipping delays worldwide. So, of course, just to put some numbers to it, shipping data showed that container ships which are anchored off Hong Kong and Shenzhen are around 22% more congested than normal conditions. So bringing back to Singapore, the data also showed that the amount of container ships are 18% more congested than normal currently. So as with all situations where, you know, demand outstrip supply, the industry may see some benefits from soaring freight rates and a ramp-up of capacity, which will translate to increased profits for the shipping market in general. So to put some numbers into context as well, the average price being paid for a 40-foot container from East Asia to Europe currently is at 15,000. And that is about 10 times higher than a pre-COVID period. And the overall situation is definitely getting more uncertain as we look towards the upcoming holiday seasons where purchases are starting to get front-loaded by some of the consumers. So overall, this may drive risk for more persistence in some aspects of inflation for our global economic conditions until probably around early next year after the holiday seasons where some easing may then be expected.
And speaking of inflation then, Junrong, the US Fed has indicated that they will hike rates in 2023. Do you think any central banks in Asia will raise rates before the Fed does?
Right. So in Asia, we have already seen some rate hikes in South Korea. Somewhat under pressure to do so in order to curb its rising inflation and household debt. And especially if you look at South Korea, a further rate hike in November is definitely in the pipeline. But generally, central banks in the region may try to maintain its accommodative monetary policy as long as possible, considering that the pickup for a vaccination rate has actually been trailing behind our global peers. And what this means is that COVID-19 risks are still being a huge uncertainty to economic growth. Therefore, central banks in the region may not want to risk having a premature tightening process unless they are forced to do so from a persistent inflation. So as of now, some countries seeing higher inflationary risks are India, South Korea, New Zealand, and the Philippines. But generally, I believe that most central banks should follow after the U.S. For rate hike because once rate starts to shift higher in U.S., central banks in other countries may be somewhat under pressure to raise their own rates so as to prevent capital outflow.
Junrong, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Yap Junrong, market strategist with IG, capping our conversation with just a look at how central banks in the Asian region could react to the Fed raising of the rates sometime in 2023. He says that it's likely that we'll stay accommodative and not hike up before the Fed.
I think it's a matter of when it will eventually happen. It's just that because in Asia Pacific, our vaccination program is just behind these developed markets. So that's why they have to take this accommodative stance. But eventually, the reality is they probably have to.
Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.